This episode is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to Squarespace.com and use the code CAST.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast Episode 11. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I am Scott Johnson.
And this is the podcast where we accurately and without any margin for error predict the future.
Yeah, in fact, we have a perfect record so far.
We have never been proven wrong.
That is to say, none of the future events have come to pass
yes,
yet.
But the future hasn't happened enough yet. joining us to help us on our way is Kirsten Sanford, a.k.a. Dr. Kiki from This Week in Science, as well as Futures in... Wait, you tell your shows before I make a mangle of them.
Yeah, This Week in Science and also Dr. Kiki's Science Hour on the Twit Network with Leo Laporte. And, some other things that are out there on the internet. They're all pretty science-y in nature.
Excellent. Also joining us is Randy Jordan, a.k.a. Randy Deluxe, co-host of The Instance, among many other things.
And I will be the resident buffoon for this episode.
Yeah, we needed one.
These episodes. I intend to break the streak. I am going to make a prediction that is provably untrue by the time these episodes air.
Oh, good.
All right. I like the cut of your jib.
Yeah, it's a little freaky. It's a little freaky to have Randy on in the sense that I host The Instance with him, so it's like this weird, like incestuous experience that we're having here on the episode.
Oh, yeah, and I listen to The Instance.
Yeah, and Dr. Kiki has no idea what it is.
And I listen to This Week in Science.
So I don't even know what I'm doing
I'm
here.
I'm actually the creepy one.
What's going on?
We wanted to have you two on together because you both have pseudonyms.
Uh-huh. Oh, interesting.
You're both listed as a.k.a. something.
Yeah.
Dr. Kiki and Randy Deluxe.
Or Tom and I are just boring birth names that we have.
Oh. Scott, Tom.
We keep trying to give you nicknames.
That's the great thing about the nicknames. You can take whatever nickname you want.
That's right.
At any time.
Beef. Yeah.
She's also the second Kirsten I've ever spoken to in my life. One was a girl I knew in high school and went to prom with, and then no other Kirstens all this time. Until now.
Really?
So I have no idea what that means. Probably nothing, but...
I predict that by the end of this month, you will meet another Kirsten.
Okay.
Does it matter if they pronounce it Kirsten or Kirsten? Mm. Or is it just the spelling that matters?
It's the spelling, but it's also the pronunciation. If you're saying Kirsten, then that...
principal.
Yeah. you're the second one in my life, and I fear the last at the rate I'm going.
Never. Yeah. Folks, if you want to send us your predictions, you can email forecastpodcast@gmail.com or post them up at our website, forecastpodcast.com. We got a few here. In fact, Victor Barber, a.k.a. Vic the Texas Rancher pilot, wrote in and said, "Hey, guys, when Paul of Paul and Storm predicted the video phone as the default communication mode of the near future and Scott lamented not being able to cover his boob with spray-on clothes, you seem to have missed an important point." I think we missed many. Vic says, "The technology probably already exists to cover your video phone nudity. I submit for your discussion Photoshop video phone clothing. You could lounge around the house buck naked all day. When your boss calls you at home, along with the customized ringtone you have set, the phone will automatically and digitally clothe your image with a three-piece suit. When grandma calls, you'll be wearing that itchy sweater she gave you last Christmas. Doable now? I think probably."
Mm. Yes, see, but then everybody would always assume you're nude, though. They would always figure you were naked with fake clothes on.
Because like anything else, you're going to be able to tell that that's the Photoshop clothes because it doesn't look quite right.
Right.
They're like, dude, you're always naked.
You would call your boss and your boss would go, "Photoshopped. I can totally tell.
Put on a real suit next time, Johnson."
Yeah. Good times. Well, thank you so much, Victor L. Barber. That's a great name.
Oh, Vic's awesome. Actually, Vic's a Buzz Out Loud listener as well, and always has good contributions.
So, good deal.
Thank you, Vic. Yes, let's move on to the short-term predictions. These are predictions of what we think will happen in the next few years. That's this episode. This is the short-term predictions episode. And let me address that, actually. There's a split decision between the folks in the forecast audience. Some people don't like that we've started splitting up the episodes. Some people do. The reason that we're doing this is so that we can bring you an episode regularly. When we were doing it once a month, it was sort of the idea was to just try it out and see how it went. But to fit our schedules and be able to, you know, get, you know, a good amount of content out, we've split them up into three.
Okay, yeah, and it makes sense that there would be some now who are a little, you know, miffed, but my experience has been there were more people irritated that it was only once a month and more people happy that they were getting it more regularly, and I think in the long run, I think people would rather have something once a week.
And I think you're going to end up getting more. We only had like 30 to 40 minutes once a month before. I think you're going to end up getting more forecast this way. At least that's the reason we're doing it.
Oh, yeah, so. And that's why we're talking so much about it at the top of the show, to sort of stretch it out and pat it.
Yes, exactly.
Just kidding. We're not doing that.
Never said that. Short-term predictions. These are predictions of what we think will happen in the next few years. Could be in your area of expertise. Could be sci-fi stuff you see in the pipeline. Whatever you want. These are a little more practical. Whom would like to go first?
I've got one.
All right, Randy.
I think there is an impending worldwide water crisis, although here in Vancouver, British Columbia, they will never notice. And I would like to predict the development of a lot more column seawater desalinization. I think that technology is about to go nuts, and I think you're going to see column desalinization off the coast of a lot of arid places where the so-called, or what we might think of as an impending water crisis, will be solved.
It's interesting that you bring this up because Leo Laporte, when he was on Forecast, only made a small mention of water wars and the whole, you know, fight for water supremacy in the future. And we didn't really flesh it out. We didn't talk more about it. But this does mark the first time where we've heard a prediction about a similar thing. I guess I would ask you this, Randy. Do you feel like doing this to the ocean will ultimately lead to its destruction? And then Dr. Kiki, you're probably going to want to jump onto
yes,
that as well, because that
I
has
do
a,
wanna,
that's very I, sciencey. It's got a lot of science
I
in
know. He's hitting all the hot buttons there, both of you are. I'm like, I'm ready to talk. I'm ready to go. Let me into the ring.
All I'm saying is I like the technology. I don't like the way the desalinization has gone for the last couple of decades. Filtration is not the answer, but I do think that column desalinization, and that's where they literally stack water in a pipe, and at some point, as you go down the column of water, there's a pressure where all the salt's being pushed into a different layer, and that's where you put a drain on it and pull off essentially fresh water, closer to fresh water than what you had. And it's the technology's coming along really nicely, and it's going to really change the world if it works out. And so that's why I'm going to predict that it works out, because I'm an optimist.
Dr.
In the
Cave,
short term.
Yeah, what would you say?
I just don't know if I necessarily agree that's going to be something that's going to work out in the short term. I mean, maybe in the next, I don't know, within the next 5 to 10 years, I guess. So it's kind of in my head, I guess, midterm or medium term. I think you're definitely right. Membrane technologies are coming along. The column desalinization is, yeah, right there, ready to go. The problem is all of it is still really expensive compared to how much fresh water you're going to get out of it. So until the price of water becomes prohibitive, it's similar to gas, that until the water becomes really expensive, it's not going to be cost effective for people to adopt these technologies. So I don't think it's going to be the politically savvy thing for politicians to do, like, let's put this offshore, because the environmentalists are going to complain about, oh, well, you put these things offshore, it's going to disrupt ecosystems. You know, you're going to stop wave action. And if this particular ecosystem survives and thrives because of the particular wave action that you get in that area, then you're going to have other unknowable, almost, environmental effects. And so there are a lot of things that go into it. I think it's a promising technology, and it's definitely going to come to its day, but I don't know that it's necessarily something that's going to happen anytime soon.
Let me throw out just a question about education. It strikes me, and I just saw a documentary on Netflix about this whole water thing. And it freaked me out fairly sufficiently, and which I think was partly designed to do. But I kept thinking in my head, this is not what they've been telling kids for generations about how water is recycled, used, consumed, recycled again, and so on. It seems to me that the fact that we're literally running out of fresh water at some rate, mm-hmm. partially due to the way we treat our water, partially due to the way we treat other forms of, or other parts of the environment, which are very important to the water supply, whatever it may be, whether it's man's impact or otherwise, we're going to be in this situation where, as a kid, I was told, there's always the same amount of water on this planet that there always was. And it doesn't matter if you're drinking it, watering something with it, using it to wash stuff, whatever. It eventually sort of evaporates at some point, gets up in the sky again, gets in the clouds, and rains on us again. Are we going to have a major education problem here where it starts to become this huge divide of people with their shotguns living in the cellar going, we ain't running out of water. This is just some kind of anti-Christian zubba zubba. And then have a bunch of scientists scratching their head going, oh, crap, another one of these deals. Do you feel like that's where we're headed?
Oh, of course there's going to be that kind of a thing. There's always going to be that kind of a thing. I mean, people hate change. They hate hearing that what they learned is wrong and that they're going to have to change their perspective on the world. The amount of water we have in the world is the amount of water that we have in the world. However, the way it's distributed and redistributed is what the problem is going to be, especially as climate change affects the distribution of precipitation. We're going to find that areas that once used to have lots of water don't have lots of water anymore. We're going to find that the middle of the United States is going to turn into a dust bowl. And hey, gee, yeah, can't water your lawn anymore. Phoenix, all the swimming pools. Yeah, those have got to go. Another problem we're going to run into is with electricity. One of the big uses, you can't use salt water. You can't use water from the oceans for the production of electricity. And a lot of alternative electricity technologies are going to rely on water.
Mm-hmm. Well, except for wave generation power, right?
Right, I mean, but then that has its own environmental things because waves come crashing in, and the wave generator things, they dampen the waves, and people don't like that. It's just we're screwed no matter what we do.
On a planet full of water,
the future.
On a planet full of water, inhabited by beings that are 70% water. Well, we have a water shortage.
The documentary kind of freaked me out because I had this one thing where they showed the Earth, and then they showed this tiny little ball next to the Earth, and they said 97% of the Earth is water, but only like this fraction, this little tiny 5% or less ball was consumable.
Right.
And
yeah,
I was like, gosh, that's terrible.
Yeah, the amount of water that we can actually drink and use is really tiny, and that's the problem. But the technologies, we have brains that can figure things out. We have so much solar energy coming to this planet. We have so much water. We can figure this out. It's just a matter of dealing with all the political stuff that's going on and the redistribution of wealth and everything that's going to happen. I mean, these water wars are going to make a huge impact into the way things run. But, something's going to happen. Things are going to change. There are always going to be people there who are telling, who are the environmentalists who are against doing anything. There are going to be the people trying to implement stuff. There are going to be the political people and people trying to make money off of it. And there's, I don't know.
All right.
You can't believe what it was like for me moving from Austin, Texas, where there has been a drought for my entire lifetime. And I was used to paying through the nose for water. The Vancouver area where water is really as close to free. It's close enough that you can round down to zero how much it costs to buy water in this part of the world.
It's amazing.
And I immediately think, oh, I guess we're going to get to see a lot of people move to areas like that. They're going to be moving to Seattle because why wouldn't you? I mean, if water's falling from the sky and 30 years from now, it's a heck of a lot more valuable than it used to be. That's where populations go.
Yeah, it makes me think of Waterworld, where there's no drinkable water. They're surrounded by this salty water that nobody can use, consume, or whatever, and you're left with like one plant that discovered
Waterworld. They just announced.
And Kevin Costner.
It's like 40 light years away.
He had to pee on some kind of little tree contraption or whatever just to get water to drink. And I kept thinking, This is the worst irony, is to be surrounded on all sides by water and not be able to drink any
of it. We waste so much water as it is right now. I mean, there's a lot of efficiencies that can be made just by restricting the amount of water used in the household system the way it is now, and recycling water and retreating and all of that. So,
but Scott, don't you feel like you were lied to in school? I mean, on a lot of points, but this one also, like you said that you felt like you were taught that there's always been a finite amount of water, or there's always been a specific amount of water, which is can't be true. There's a lot more water on the earth than there was, say, 2.5 billion years ago. There's a lot of things that happen. If you look back at how you were taught in the 70s and the 80s or whatever.
Yeah, they told me the buffalo were all dead, too.
Well, I mean, yeah, I do feel that way a little bit. I feel like there's an oversimplification of these issues and things. And I understand when you're a little grade school kid and you need to get the basic concepts down to go ahead and teach it that way. But when you get into secondary and high school and all these other things, it just seems like it should have ramped up, and it never really did in this area of science for me. Now, maybe that's different today. I talked to my own kids about it. What are they teaching you guys in environmental science? It does seem like there's some differences, but on the whole, it just feels like the clouds rain, the ground soaks it up, the ground evaporates, it goes back in the clouds, and there's happy smiley faces on the clouds, and they rain on your pretty flowers, and everybody can water their lawn forever. And I feel like it's a little misleading.
I specifically remember being taught Lamarckian evolution in junior high. I remember a science teacher teaching Lamarckian evolution and then teaching Darwinian evolution, but never saying this supplanted that. And I knew people who, they got to college before they realized, wow, I was really fed a big pile of crap here, you know, at like – That was only 20 years ago, you know.
Yeah, but then there's the political stuff. There's people being fed like a huge thing of crap, and there's other people saying it wasn't crap. It was the way. It's the truth. It's the light.
In Illinois, I was taught that our government wasn't corrupt. I mean, they teach you a lot of crazy stuff. We got to take a quick break here, and then when we come back, we'll turn the tables, and Dr. Kiki will make her prediction, and then Randy will get to tear it apart.
That's right. Yes.
Great.
Awesome. Just wanted to jump in here and let people know this episode is brought to you by Squarespace.com. If you didn't know, it is the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. I use Squarespace over at frogpants.com. You should go check it out, see what I've done with it. Squarespace.com has all kinds of stuff, like an easy-to-use UI for creating and managing a website or blog, optimized for both beginners and CSS experts, so we're not leaving you hardcore nerds out. Hundreds of design templates to choose from. You can customize any of them to sort of fit your needs. An all-inclusive service that includes things like several modules to build on your website, blog modules, includes importing and exporting for WordPress, Blogger, Movable Type, and Typepad. It means you don't get stuck with it. If you need to move it off, you always can. They're thinking of you, and they're thinking of the future, just like we do on Forecast. There's a forum, photo gallery, form builder. Collect emails and stuff from people when they visit your site. Find out who your fans are, your readers are. Google Maps and more. Website tracking, built-in search engine optimization. Permission access handling, which is cool. Cloud architecture for speed and site stability. And an innovative drag-and-drop Ajax interface. Use Squarespace for all your website needs. Build it, host it, and manage it. Here's the best part. Go get a free trial at squarespace.com. There is no credit card needed. Just try it out and build your website. And if you decide to purchase it, you get 10% off the lifetime, not just some little initial month or something, the lifetime of your service. And that code to use is CAST, C-A-S-T.
All right. Don't forget to leave comments at our website, forecastpodcast.com. Let's get back into the short-term predictions with Dr. Kiki. What do you got?
All right. What do I have for this short-term? Short-term. I had a couple. Short term, I predict that in 2012, the world is not going to end.
Yay!
You're nuts. That's insane.
Absolutely crazy, I know. But more to the point, related to the Copenhagen stuff that's going on right now, I predict that, they're talking about stuff, but really not much is going to come of it.
Yeah, I've heard that from a lot of people, that they don't feel like a lot of ground's going to be made here this time, and a lot of people are really disappointed in that, and that some are saying they may as well not even have it, but I don't know. I'd probably argue that you got to keep trying, making, you know, pushing forward and stuff. Because if 2012 is not going to happen, the way that all the crazy people
think we're not all going to die in a fiery apocalypse.
Yeah, you know, what will probably end up happening is nothing. And instead, we will continue along a path of a slow burn. Like, it's none of this is immediate. There's something nice about 2012, you know, catastrophe, because if it's going to happen, bam, you're out. You're done. You don't have to deal with it. You're off. But the way things seem to go, if we don't get smarter about certain things with continued population growth and this whole water thing and everything else, it seems like we're just slowly dying. And that's way worse to me. You know, I'd rather have a heart attack and be done. I don't want cancer for 8 years.
If Dr. Kiki gets to make a prediction that just has to come true, then I want to follow up the Copenhagen thought with this one. And that is humanity, the way that human beings work, we have to be on fire before we call for water. And I really believe that's the way that climate change is going to eventually get results. That at some point you're going to hear all of humanity screaming, "Look at these disasters! Why didn't you do something sooner?" And that's what it's going to take. So I feel like in some ways all this planning, all these political maneuverings, because that's what COP15 is. It's a bunch of political leaders. You know, it's not. There's a mistaken belief that it's got anything to do with scientists talking about reality. I think all of this is a big waste of time, because it's not going to accomplish anything until everyone's hair is on fire. Then we're going to get a lot done.
It is a waste of time in a sense, in that practical sense that you're talking about. But it is also the way political machinery in the world works. And if you don't do these things, then you don't have the relationships and the pipelines and the backdoor channels and all that crap that is needed in our current world governmental system to make things happen when it does happen. The fact that President Obama will be there and meet a few people will help grease the wheels in the future when he needs to talk to somebody and he knows, oh, right, I remember talking to this person or that person, or we'll have worked out some stuff. It's diplomatic crap. I totally agree with you.
Yep.
But it's unfortunately necessary the way we've got things going. That doesn't mean I think this is the way the world should be worked, but that's why they do it. Even though they all know going into Copenhagen that they're not going to come out with anything really tangible, but they all feel like they have to do it so that they can set up for the future.
Yeah, there's this notion too of that human beings are just naturally reactionary, and that we rarely think way ahead and think way ahead, especially about the well-being of either future generations or even our own children's era. And I think that's true. So this idea that we will only scream for the water when we're on fire, I think has a lot of truth for it in the larger sense too, because we just tend to wait until it's too much. And whether that's political pressure is too much or whether that's something else. I mean, one thing that sets things back is all these dumb emails that got leaked out of Europe. And, you know, I'm sure Al Gore's just rolling around in the mud crying right now because he made a lot of ground.
He does that, though.
But yeah, I mean, he really furthered his efforts and gotten a lot further down the road than a lot of other people with some clout had gotten, working again within this system. But to have that happen is a few steps back, and it gives people an excuse to go see, and then, you know, they're not really looking at the whole picture or whatever, and it's really too bad. But I kind of hate the red tape and hate that we're so reactionary. I know this isn't the I Wish show, but I wish we were less reactionary.
I'd like to point out that on Dr. Kiki's blog, her most recent blog post tears down a bunch of climate change myths. And what blows my mind about the myths, and I mean, like, she literally went and copied them from elsewhere. This is what people are actually telling one another. They literally take the observable reality and just reverse it and say to the masses, you know, the sky is not filled with clouds. They will literally just take the, you know, and reverse it. How do you defeat that? Unless people are on fire, I can't imagine you will ever be able to defeat that kind of message.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how you defeat it. I mean, I've gotten so many responses from that particular posting where people are just coming back at what I've said and saying, "Well, you're wrong. You know, how do you know this? It's like, well, there's science that backs it up. And they say, no, that science is wrong. You can't trust the scientists. And it's, I keep coming back to the fact, I mean, you said that people are reactionary. I think also that people are afraid of change, and they're afraid of the having their patterns broken, having things be different in some way. They're afraid of the what that different is going to be, and that if you can't get people to be comfortable with the idea of change, it's not going to happen. They're just going to be fearful, and that's what people are playing off of, is the fear card.
There's a psychology at work in this debate, in any political debate about healthcare or the economy or anything else. Once it moves out of the realm of science, where it's all about rhetoric, it's not...
The healthcare debate. They're going to kill your grandmothers.
Right. And it starts to become a both sides thing, right? There's this side and that side. And once that happens, both sides start to dig in, and there's a psychological reaction to casting doubt on the other side versus worrying about what's true. And that's what's the problem is that, and you're experiencing this now with your blog post where you tried to go through and say, like, here are the issues that with these arguments. Suddenly you're in a he said, she said, and you can't win that. That's not productive. That's not what's going to determine what's actually going on with the climate or the answer to any question. What is going to determine it is science, is methodology, is trying to use the scientific method to be objective. And I know there's people out there listening right now saying, like, yeah, but the scientists aren't being objective.
Scientists are biased too. You can't say anything. It's like, okay, scientists are people, but they're also trying to do things in a methodical manner, which is very different from politics. You know, that's the difference between science and anything else is the methodology. I think you're right there that what it comes down to is getting past it. You either give up or you just keep repeating the same things over and over, or we can try and, you know, follow the psychology of it and try and, spin the arguments in a similar way, looking for those emotional buttons, sensationalize stuff before it gets sensationalized. Or we can just go to Scandinavia and, live over, next to a moat or something. I don't know.
It's funny because it's all about people's unwillingness to change. Well, we talked about it's hard for people to change in their ways, but I think there's a larger problem where they're confronted with something like people are destroying the environment, and here's how it's happening. You feel so helpless. Like, you feel like if I stop driving my car completely and I eat nothing but leaves and, I power my house with solar, I am not going to even make a dent in the thing you're accusing me of.
And you don't need to. I mean,
and that's hard. That's really hard.
The thing is, it's going to take much larger efforts to determine what's actually going on with the climate than you could ever do.
Right.
So, I mean, there's good science out there. It's being done. You can find it. There's even good science that, like, Dr. Lindzen at Stanford, who says, hey, this thing, whole thing may be self-correcting. We don't know. The thing is, people, we don't know everything. And everybody who does this debate on either side, when it becomes a public debate, wants to pretend like, I know my side knows everything about it and your side doesn't. And if your side shows the little bit of doubt, then that proves you're wrong. And that's just not the way it works.
It's childish. It's my 3-year-old, or when I had a 3-year-old, she used to think if she closed her eyes real tight that I couldn't see her.
Right.
That's object permanence.
What's the difference? This is all the same to me. Anyway, sorry. I don't want to get all worked up, but...
Yeah, but I think there is hope out there. I mean, the reason I brought up Scandinavia is it wasn't just a random aside. It's a beautiful country, but related near Scandinavia in the Netherlands, the Dutch are actually, they've been working on trying to develop a 100-year program. So basically looking at everything with a 100-year scale. So they're not developing their policies based on the next 2 to 3 years. They're basing their policies on what their grandchildren are going to be experiencing. And so everything they're starting to do right now, looking at how they're going to approach environmental concerns, climate concerns, policies, what they're doing is to approach it with a much longer term framework than any other country is doing.
All right. Well, I'm very happy to have you guys on. This is a really good, thick discussion we've had today. I'm sure people are going to have a lot to say in the forums on forecastpodcast.com or by email, forecastpodcast@gmail.com. And I'm really psyched that we have you around for two more episodes. So stay tuned for the next episode. Next week, we will have the long-term predictions. And maybe we'll talk a little bit less about current events once we get into the long-term. Randy, Kirsten, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Crazy coming.
We'll see you later, folks.
Bye.
It's only 32 years away.